Morning, everyone. Before we get started, I'd like to turn the floor over to Greg Kupka, WMATA's Deputy Chief of Occupational Safety and Health, for this morning's safety contact.
Thank you. In case of an emergency, we will egress through the main doors, illuminated by the exit signs, and we will then assemble on the lawn of the National Building Museum. An automatic external defibrillator is located behind the guard station out front. Fire extinguishers are strategically located throughout the building, and restrooms are located past the guard desk on the left. For this month's safety contact, we will be focusing on National Bike Month. May is National Bike Month, with next Friday being Bike to Work Day. With this event and recent warm weather, everyone should be aware of additional cyclists on the streets. Drivers are reminded to turn on vehicle headlights at dusk and be vigilant in looking out for cyclists and pedestrians. When traveling on city streets, cyclists should follow the same rules of the road as motorized vehicles. This means stopping at stop signs, obeying traffic signals and lane markings, and using hand signals to let others know your intention to stop or turn. The following video is a public service announcement produced by AAA.
Thank you, Mr. Kupka. Again, good morning, everyone. My name is Tony Costa. I'm Vice Chairman of the Capital and Strategic Planning Committee. I'll be running the committee today because our chairman, Jim Corcoran, could not be here. Our first item of business is to approve today's agenda. Does anyone have any suggested changes to the agenda?
No.
I see no objections. The agenda is approved as presented. Next is the approval of minutes from previous meetings. I'd like to ask for a motion from a committee member.
These are revised.
Okay. Did I already screw up? No, my.
Yeah.
Scrub that last one off on the page.
Next is the approval from minutes from previous meetings. I'd like to ask for a motion from a committee member to approve the minutes of the committee's April 12th meeting.
So moved.
Second? I'm going to second. All in favor of approving the minutes as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. The minutes are presented or approved. Approved as presented. Now that we have the committee's administrative business out of the way, I'd like to briefly review the two items on today's agenda. Both items contain a great deal of important information. Our first presentation will provide an overview of the three-year safety and state of good repair program to rebuild 20 rail stations and simultaneously complete other key work during station closings between next year and 2021. Our general manager, Paul Wiedefeld, will make opening remarks and then hand off the presentation to his team sitting across from me. Our second item today is an update by Eric Christensen, who served as the interim chief of capital planning and program management on Metro's capital program performance through the third quarter of fiscal year 2018. As Metro continues its aggressive rebuilding program, it has invested $810 million in its capital program this fiscal year and is on track to deliver on 95% of planned investment. Successful implementation of these capital projects is a major contributor to our riders' experiences. Rail customers are experiencing less offloads, bus on-time performance is increasing, and elevators and escalators are meeting or exceeding the reliability targets. I'd also like to recognize that Mr. Christensen will be joined by Tom Webster, who is taking on that position in a permanent role. Congratulations on your new role, Mr. Webster. I'll turn the floor over to our general manager, Paul Wiedefeld.
Okay, thanks, sir. With me today, John Thomas and Andy Off. Let me just, if I could, just for a minute, I wanted to thank Andy and his entire team. They've been working since, I think we got the call at 4:40 yesterday afternoon with the fire up on the Red Line, and we got off the call around 9 o'clock last night. We got back on at 3 a.m. this morning, and we just got noticed that there's some other things that we got to be doing that. So he's juggling a lot of balls in the air. But I think it's important for him to be here because this platform project. Unlike historically how we would go about engineering projects, primarily they were engineering driven. And as you know, about a year ago, we reorganized where engineering is now under the operations world, so that basically all operation issues are being done simultaneously as we work through engineering issues. So that's a little different as an agency. So that's what this presentation reflects. So before I turn to John, unlike SafeTrack, we're now at the beginning of delivering large capital projects, and it gives us the benefit of planning months in advance. And this is an example of that. We're planning 14 months before we actually do something here, but we're starting that process, and that's why we want to communicate it so that we can start to position ourselves with both the project, make sure we're getting the best product, but also what we do for our customers in the meantime. So after months of working on this, again, with the operations folks and the engineering folks, the proposal that we're putting forward, we believe, is the safest for both our passengers, for our employees, and for the contractors doing the work. It's definitely the fastest by months. We will do things in months versus years, if not decades, to do the type of work we have to do. We've created an approach that we're trying to limit the impact on the entire system by focusing on, yes, impacts on parts of the system, but trying to get the rest of the system to perform as advertised. And it's actually much more cost effective to do what we proposed here. It also, and Mr. Chairman, you just mentioned it, it does allow us then the ability to get into and do other important work that needs to be done, that if we don't do it during these closures, we'll have to come back later and do closures. So it's everything from crossovers to power improvements to getting ready for the Potomac Yards. All these projects eventually impact the two-track railroad. So the more we can get when we have a closure, the more we minimize those impacts on the customers later. So that's part of the overall strategy. So we're in the process, as you can imagine, working with all the jurisdictions, the PIOs, the DOTs, COG, and different players, as we work through how do we mitigate the mobility issues that we have to deal with. And that's what we want to focus on. And we have obviously much more time. So it's not just bus bridges. We want to think much more globally about what we can bring to the table, and we want to do that with the local jurisdictions and other partners. So the other thing that we also want to get on the table, and again, it's starting to think ahead as we have these big impacts on the system, is the two major projects that are not our projects that will impact the system, one being the Purple Line and one being the I-66. So both of those projects will require access to the two-track railroad for their projects. So we need to work with them and then pull in the jurisdictions of how do we mitigate when they come in and impact the system. Again, those are projects being driven by us, but they need access to our right-of-way to do their work. They need to go over us in many cases with large bridges, take some bridges out and replace them, and in some places they hit our power system. So all that's got to be thought of now, and we want to incorporate as much as we can with other things that we're doing wherever we can to minimize, again, the impact. But those are major projects that are going to play out in the next few years. These are significant multi-billion-dollar projects that touch us on several points. So with that, I'll turn it over to John to walk through the presentation with the help of Andy as well.
Excuse me. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We're here to update the FY19 capital program to lay out the three-year station platform reconstruction project for us to finally get after addressing structural deficiencies and improve passenger safety. We also, as Mr. Weaverville just noted, want to sort of talk a little bit more about the I-66 project and the Purple Line project and what preliminary thinking is on the impacts to the railroad by those projects. So on the next slide, just sort of brief background. So 45 of our stations are outdoor. Metro's had a long love affair with concrete, so they're all made of concrete. And we know what de-icing agents and freeze-thaw and all that sort of has an effect it has on concrete. So primarily the portions of the platforms that are outside of the platform canopies are in the worst of the shape. And those platforms that are 35 to 40 years old are exhibiting the worst of the conditions. So we know that this has been a problem. We've already rebuilt 10 of the stations. We did 8 of them under what we called the Red Line contract, and then the last two we did under what we call the Orange Blue Line contract. 15 of the stations, as per their last inspection, are still in good state of good repair. but that leaves 20 that need work to repair deteriorated concrete and to make sure that the platforms remain safe. So we are absolutely considering these concrete repair projects as a safety project. Next slide. Here's some pictures of Braddock, King, and Van Dorn stations to show the various states of deterioration. On the underside, you wouldn't know that necessarily standing on a platform, but that's the condition. At Braddock Road, you can see where we've already installed some temporary measures to help support the concrete and the platform edge, the granite edge. And we now inspect these platforms instead of annually, we do them every 90 days. On the next slide, we start to get into what we've experienced rebuilding the platforms in the past. We know there's extensive setup and takedown of the work zones and the temporary measures, which has a meaningful impact on contractor productivity. So not only do we have a work zone on the platform, but as you can see in the middle photo on the bottom, when we're doing the work, there's contractors that need to be standing on the track bed and have equipment in the track bed. So we have the work zone on the platform, but then we also have to set up the work zone on the tracks because we can't have trains in service, obviously, when we have workers standing in that area. And as you can see, you know, in these photos, when we have these work zones set up on the platforms, it causes a significant constriction of the amount of space that's on a platform. And that really cramps the customer's ability to move around a platform and stand comfortably while they're waiting for a train. And also, given that we're doing concrete, we know that bad weather has an impact on the ability to place concrete. If it gets too cold, you can't place concrete. You don't do it in the rain. So that's another factor that goes into some of the challenges that we've experienced over the years. On the next slide, we talk about our most recent experiences, which was on the Orange Line at Minnesota Avenue in Deanwood. So as we've been doing, we kept the stations open during the work, which meant we weren't doing anything during rush hour. We were trying to do it during non-revenue at night and then primarily on the weekend. There's very little opportunity to do work during non-revenue periods at night because, again, the setup and takedown of the work zones cuts into the actual productivity. So while they may have worked during the non-revenue periods, the amount of work that they would have gotten complete would have been very limited. So they primarily worked on the weekends. And that's why that's why it ended up taking about 3 years to do those two stations. And I know about 2 years ago when I was promoted into my current position, one of the first meetings I had was with the council member that represents Ward 7 standing on a platform at Minnesota Avenue right in the middle of the construction zone that you can sort of see in the lower right-hand photo there with a large contingent of the neighborhood residents who were not happy about the extended period of time it took for them to be using the station in that condition. So we've been hearing that from the community, and what we're trying to do is not continue to do that to the riders. So on the next slide is sort of an efficiency comparison. So, you know, a crude calculation would say that, well, if you took 3 years to rebuild two platforms, and you have 20, that could take 30 years. Again, that's a very crude approach, but as an extrapolation of the most recent experiences we had, you know, that's a way to measure what we could be facing. So what you see here on this slide is, you know, an efficiency comparison. And what we're saying is that if we only tried to work during non-passenger hours, it would take a platform about 18 months, and that's assuming we're having about an hour and a half of efficient work per night, 7 nights a week for 18 months, which is it's impractical to think that we're going to work 7 days a week for 18 months. What you see in the next calculation is a way to look at it differently, where we're working only on the weekends. And let me give you a little bit of the background on the numbers here. So what we estimate is that by the time we set up and take down work zones on a weekend, that we end up with somewhere in the neighborhood of 36 productive hours on any one two-day weekend. We believe that it takes somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 days if you had unlimited access to do a station. So that's about 720 hours. So if you got 36 hours per weekend, and fortunately the math works nicely, that ends up with 20 weekends of work. And so what we're showing here is that assuming that we would work every other weekend, only on weekends, it would take 10 months to do one platform. And the assumptions that are in that is that there are no reasons why the scheduled weekend work wouldn't happen. You know, there wouldn't be a rain event that would cancel the weekend. There wouldn't be some other unplanned march on Washington like we had in the end of March that would force us to cancel the weekend. So that's assuming that we could get in every other weekend for 10 consecutive months to do the platforms. So what we're proposing here is that we do that obviously in a much considerable time by providing 24/7 access, unlimited access to do the work, which we believe would be 94% faster, but also safer and cost considerably less. And the next slide is just showing an indication of, you know, somebody that takes the train to work. You know, we're not minimizing the impacts on the rider that would endure what we're proposing, but they would have, you know, less than 10% impacts to their trips if we do what we propose what we're doing here. So on the next slide is the layout of the plan. So what we're proposing to do is take 20 stations and starting next May, with Memorial Day weekend.
Excuse me, can we catch up?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Correct slide.
Uh-oh, looks like it's frozen.
I can't find it.
Oh, I got it. There we go.
One more. There we go. All right. So once again, what we're proposing is that the 20 platforms I mentioned earlier, that we would start Memorial Day next year and continue through the fall of 2021 using a continuous work plan, continuous access to the railroad. We're estimating that this is somewhere in the neighborhood of $300 million capital project. And what it entails is extended summer shutdowns starting Memorial Day and continuing through Labor Day when our ridership is the lightest. We would have work at other times during the year with limited single tracking or shorter track outages to try to minimize service impacts. We plan to do a lot of advanced planning to coordinate with jurisdictions and our other partner agencies to provide customers at least 3 months advance notice of service impacts and mitigation options for riders. So the implementation strategy. So an extensive internal planning has occurred for months. We started pretty much in October with our internal discussions on this and got to pretty much 95% of what you see here somewhere here about 6 or 7 weeks ago. And what I want to note here is that this is not a technically challenging project. We have concrete that's failing. We're going to replace it with concrete. So the technical problem and solution is not what's driving this. This is a logistics challenge. So the internal planning and why Mr. Office is sitting here next to me is As an engineer, I can figure out what the problem is with concrete, and I can design a solution to repair that concrete. But it's the implementation of that repair which is what's so challenging. So Andy and I and our respective staffs have been spending a considerable amount of time trying to figure out how to actually implement this. Two of the platforms that are in the 20, National Airport and Arlington Station, were in a contract, the contract that we did Minnesota Avenue and Deanwood. We deleted those platform rebuilds from that contract because, frankly, at the time, when we could not figure out logistically as an organization how to do them. So we were having so much trouble at Minnesota and Deanwood that we felt that it wasn't worth trying to have that contractor tackle those two platforms under the terms of that contract. So we know that we've been trying it for this. We've had, you know, success in actually completing them. Technically, they're completed, but it's been very painful for both the riders and for the public. So we've been doing a lot of work internally to try to figure out how to do this. So we've been looking at station configurations and service impacts. So when we're doing a side platform station, when we have 14-foot track centers, we're not convinced that we can do that under a single track, for example, because of the proximity of the tracks to each other. And you saw in the photo earlier, we have people out on the tracks when they're working on the platform. So the side platform stations, we know we want to do under a complete shutdown. The other things that we were considering is where are the crossovers that allow us to move the trains from one side of the, from one track to the other, and where are the stations that need to be repaired in terms of, in relationship to the end of the line. We're trying to make sure that the impact at any one station minimizes or doesn't impact the remainder of the line. And what we're trying to do, as Mr. Wiedefeld noted earlier, is we're trying to maximize service across the whole system while we're working in any one part of it. So one of the things that we did a few months ago, we put a request for expression of interest, basically solicited some input from the industry, and we put it out as a general call to contractors and said to them, if we gave you unlimited access to the railroad for 90 days, how many platforms could you rebuild? And that was essentially what we asked. We didn't try to put any more constraints or any more guidance on it. We were trying to learn from the people who do the work out there. We got two responses, and they both said that they believed that if we gave them unlimited access for 90 days, they could rebuild three stations. Now, interestingly, the two that responded happened to be the two contractors who have built the rebuilt the 10 platforms. Kiewa Construction did the ones on the Red Line. Clark Construction did the ones at Minnesota and Deanwood. So the fact that they've been involved in working in our railroad, rebuilding platforms, gives me a level of comfort. I won't say confidence, but I'll say comfort that in a 90-day period, we can get after three stations and get them completely rebuilt. So I think that's it in terms of where we are on the platforms. So the implementation strategy on the next slide talks about some of the other things we're going to do under this first shutdown. The Huntington parking garage, there's three of them at Huntington. The southernmost, which is also the oldest, is about 50% closed because of structural deficiencies. We know that garage is at the end of its useful life and needs to be replaced. And one of the reasons why we want to do the demolition during the summer shutdown is that that particular garage happens to be integrated into the south entrance to that station. So if we did the demolition sort of as a standalone project, we would have to close that entrance to the station for the safety of the customers. And because of the general geography and the layout of the station, somebody that would normally use that station would have quite a trek to get to the other end of the station, if you're familiar with that part of the region. There's a rail bridge that's inbound from Van Dorn Station that we need to do some structural repairs on that we have to access inside the track girders. The manholes are between the running rails. The only way we can open those manholes and get inside those girders is to take the trains out of service. So we're going to do that work then. Crossovers, you've probably heard it in many venues. We don't have enough of them. So what we're proposing to do is install a new crossover between King Street and Braddock Road during this outage. to help us improve our ability to move trains around the system. Several years ago, we embarked on a program to replace traction power substations on the blue and orange lines. The next and last phase of that project is taking care of the substations and tiebreakers south of National Airport. That contract was awarded about a month ago, so we're taking advantage of the substations being offline next summer to replace the equipment in three of those substations. Alexandria Yard will be isolated, so we're going to go down there and do a repair blitz on those things that would otherwise cause problems for the people who are, you know, maintaining the trains. Potomac Yard Station is about ready to be awarded and given notice to proceed, so about a year from now we believe that contractor can be in a position to start doing some of the early invasive work for that project. We have a crossover just inbound from Huntington Station that is in need of repair. We have a slow order there today that one of the things that we're going to do is take care of that crossover to try to take care of that. And then there's a whole host of things that we want to do in terms of just improving the stations. You know, while we've got them closed down, we're going to hit them hard in addition to the platforms. We're going to try to make the stations look as new as possible, so when the customers do come back, it'll at least look like we did something, because looking down at the platforms, they might not realize the amount of work that we had to do to rebuild the platform. So we're going to try to do some of the things in the public realm as well, new signage, new lights, some other repairs, general, you know, deep cleaning, concrete cleaning, and that kind of thing while we're there. So a little bit further detail on phase one of the platform rebuild for next year. So in the summer of 2019, all service would be shut down south of National Airport. So Braddock, King, and Eisenhower are the platforms that we would we're planning to rebuild. We're also going to put into the contract for the contractor to do at least half of Van Dorn, and we'll work on figuring out some language to incentivize them to try to get all of Van Dorn completed in this period. When we come out of the summer shutdown, and by the way, when the Savin National is the terminus, it's a three-track station, two platforms. It will allow us to operate normal service on the blue lines and the yellow lines on the rest of the system with National as the terminus. So what we're proposing here and what we think is reasonable at this point is we get those three full platforms done in half of Van Dorn. So when we come out of the summer shutdown, we still have the second half of Van Dorn to complete. So we're saying probably about another month of work at Van Dorn under a continuous single track. When we finish that, we would go down to Franconia Springfield, do that as a continuous single track. But with the headways that we're running these days, Mr. Off is confident that we will be able to run normal service out of that terminus with only half the platform functioning. When we finish at Springfield, we would move on to National and Huntington. Huntington, again, is the end of the line. We'll do half a platform at a time, crossover right in front of it, which will allow us to operate normally out of Huntington. And again, National being a three-track, two-platform configuration, the phasing that we have proposed will allow normal service to run through National Airport while we are rebuilding half a platform at a time. On the next slide, we sort of give a preview of the outer years. Starting in the summer of 2020, we're going to go to the other end of the railroad and do what we call the Outer Green Line. West Hyattsville, College Park, and Greenbelt, those platforms we know need to be rebuilt. There's a station in the middle of that, Prince George's Plaza, that currently the platform is not in need of any repair, but by the time we get to summer 2020, if it does, since it'll be closed, we will take care of Prince George's Plaza as well. When we come out of that, we'll go down to Rhode Island Avenue. Simultaneously, in the summer of 2020, we're going to go to the other end of the Orange Line and go do Vienna and Dunloring. When we come out of the summer, we would do West Falls Church. West Falls Church is like National Airport. It's a three-track, two-platform system. So we will be able to do West Falls Church in phases with normal train operation. East Falls Church would commence in the winter of 2021. There's no way to do that other than we believe it was an extended single track. And the last of them is in the summer of 2021. We'd go to the Orange Line, Chevrolet, Landover, New Carrollton platforms, and all in need of repair. So we would take care of those. When we come out of that, we would have the what we call a couplet of Addison Road and Arlington Cemetery. Arlington is a side platform station. Again, as I noted earlier, side platforms we know we can't do under single track, so Arlington would require a double track outage. And given that that's the blue line, we coupled the work at Addison Road with Arlington Cemetery. Blue line service would be degraded because of the Arlington shutdown, so we figured it wouldn't be any worse to do Addison Road as an extended single track while we've got Arlington shut down. So we've always had Addison and Arlington as a couplet. And the detailed service impacts are yet to be determined. So what we want to talk about here in the last two slides are jurisdictional projects that are coming our way. The Purple Line, as we know, connects Bethesda to New Carrollton with stops at Silver Spring and College Park. The work at Bethesda and Silver Spring are going to require track outages. At Bethesda, we're adding a second entrance at the south end of that station. So there's going to be the need to build a mezzanine over the south end of the platform over both tracks. We haven't worked out exactly the details of how that's going to happen. We did something similar to that up at the Convention Center station about 20 years ago, and we extended the mezzanine there. So we have some experience in what it will take to build a mezzanine over a platform. But the bigger problem or bigger project that we have is going to be at Silver Spring. The Purple Line project is going to be doing three things above our tracks at Silver Spring. There's a bridge about a half mile or so north of the station that's going to be demolished and rebuilt. They're going to have outages for that. The rail line bridge for the Purple Line it goes over our tracks just north of the station. It's a 270-foot long steel girder. And then the third thing they're going to be doing is they're going to be building a new entrance over us, a new mezzanine over the south end of Silver Spring Station. So what the contractors preliminarily identified for next year is about 10 weekend outages, and they've asked for them as 8 consecutive weekends in the summer of 2019. And their primary work product during that is the building of that 270-foot long bridge. Andy and I have been meeting with the Purple Line folks to understand what they need and what they're doing to try to figure out whether or not there's a less invasive way to do the work that they're proposing. We are not there yet. One of the complicating factors in that project, certainly the work over us, is the fact that our tracks are sitting between CSX. So not only does the Purple Line contractor need to coordinate with us to build over us, they need to coordinate with CSX. So that's an ongoing an effort. And then the last thing we have here on the deck is the I-66 work. So there's a plan to widen I-66 outside the Beltway. The VDOT has got a contractor starting that. They're going to be widening the corridor well beyond Vienna. But what that does is it affects 5 bridges that are currently over us, and each one of those bridges has to be rebuilt while they're doing that. We have a substation that services Dunloring that's currently in the way of the widening of the road. So they've asked for, right now, in preliminary discussions, they've asked for a weekend outage every month for the duration of that project, which is 3 to 4 years. We're in discussions about, again, the details of that and what that's going to mean to us and figure out whether there's any opportunities for us. Obviously, we propose that when we're out there, Vienna and Dunloring rebuilding the platforms for the summer of 20, that would give them an opportunity to, hit their work hard. The challenge for them is that some of the work that they need to do would require the closure of lanes, put a crane in the place, and VDOT is currently not allowing them to close lanes during rush hour. So even though we may be closed for around the clock for a couple of months to rebuild those platforms, that contractor will not have the ability to work uninterrupted like we are while to rebuild anything over us. So the next steps, last slide, coordinate with the, is to coordinate with the jurisdictions and transportation partners to develop service alternatives for customers during phase one of the platform rebuild program. We want to refine the project schedules so we can give 6 months advance notice to the public. And we want to continue our contracting process so we can make sure that we have a contractor on board for successful and timely implementation of this program. With that, open for questions.
Thank you. This is a really complicated program. And obviously with real impacts, that's why we're here. We don't have a lot of time in this committee meeting, but there are tons of issues, and I think what we'll look forward to, not necessarily today, is to understand the check-ins that we will continue to have, because I think it's important to do that. I want to make two quick points, and I think there are questions embedded in both. When you talked about the three-year duration of prior rebuilds, was that the contract schedule or the actual experience?
That was the reality of what we experienced.
So I'd recommend really looking at, thankfully, what you termed crude comparisons, mm-hmm. because I think it's, I don't think it's comparing apples and oranges, but it's comparing Fuji and Macintosh, because you have two contractors have responded to an RFI and said, hey, we can get this done in 3 months. I would say that too. And you don't have a contract for those 3 months. So that's a data point. And then you have experience where your projects lasted far longer than your contract suggested. I don't love that comparison. Although I will agree with you that I know it will take far less time to rebuild the stations if the system's closed. But I think when we talk about impact on people, a little bit more subtlety and less crude would be good, because I just don't believe the endpoints for that comparison. Although knowing now where the data come from, I get it. I think to be a little bit more skeptical on your end to present to the public would be helpful.
So if I may, it's one other thing that I did mention. We've also hired somebody that I met over 30 years ago who spent about 40 years working in for the contractor, Clark and Kiewit in this case. So we've hired him and asked him to basically, we gave him the contract as we've got it formulated and said, give us your read. You're a contractor. You've been doing nothing but bidding contracts for the year. So we wanted to find out what kind of flaws generally are in the contract. But look at what we're proposing. So he's given us a schedule, and we're asking him to say, we want you to be brutally honest. So he's given us a schedule that he believes that it's reasonable to do three platforms in 90 days. So, you know, I certainly sit here and say there's a guarantee. Yeah, right. That's unrealistic, but I would say that we're trying to engage every resource that we can to raise our level of confidence that what we're proposing here actually can be accomplished.
And I know that's all you can do at this point.
Right.
So I would just suggest a different way of presenting it. The other question I have is, you know, this is a catch-22 situation. You have to provide enough detail to explain to folks what you're planning before you engage fully in how to deal with those impacts, and I understand that. And it sounds like you've worked with the jurisdictions. I don't really know the extent of that, but there's infrastructure work going on across the region beyond I-66 and Purple Line that those jurisdictions will have an intimate familiarity with. So to some extent, I guess I would ask you all, it's not just mitigation activities from standpoint of riders, but would you consider changes in the basic structure of this program delivery plan? It's almost a no-brainer. If you discover impacts that you hadn't thought about or considered, because there might be information out there that you didn't have to understand when you put together this basic plan and sequencing. And I think that's really, really important because, frankly, some of the impact on riders are not just those who use WMATA, but impact on mobility, period. and the jurisdictions probably have a more acute understanding of what that'll be. So I'm looking to understand a little bit of that dynamic moving forward.
Yeah, we've already started. There's, I know our external relations office has already had extensive conversations this week, you know, when the information was posted on Monday. So that has started for purposes of, you know, learning if there's something that we weren't obviously already aware of.
So do you have some notion of a schedule to say, yes, we've locked down first phase, and here's what this means, and we've worked with essentially the city of Alexandria and Fairfax County to understand the impacts, and this is what we're doing. I mean, is there that time frame out there?
So I think the phase one we're trying to say is locked down because we actually have an RFQ on the street right now for that contract, because we're trying to get to a notice to proceed to that contract on November 1st. So we can give the contractor 6.5 to 7 months of time for purposes of mobilization, acquiring materials, and getting ready to when Memorial Day hits next year, that they're going to be ready to go and have everything set up so that we can, you know, increase the likelihood we're going to be finished.
That makes perfect sense from the contracting standpoint and starting the project, but I still don't understand in the next 6 months how you will button down your work with the City of Alexandria and Fairfax County from the standpoint of potential impacts on that contract.
That's what we've just started this week. So we're going to start having some meetings with them, detailed meetings that they've asked for that haven't been scheduled yet, to understand anything that they have going on so we can make sure that we're coordinating for the mitigation. Nothing's been finalized. We've started preliminary conversations, but we haven't sat down and had detailed conversations about anything that they have going on.
One more contracting question.
Mm-hmm.
So in the RFQ, are we pushing forward with details about project delivery and schedule? Because again, it's a catch-22 if you're already out to the market and you haven't had those detailed discussions with the jurisdictions. I'm trying to get my arms around how this will work.
So what we did in the RFQ is to not get ahead of this discussion or with any of those discussions. The RFQ basically said to the contracting community, give us a schedule for King Street, assuming you had unlimited access to it. We didn't talk about 90 days. We didn't talk about when. We just said, give us a schedule for a platform with a double-track outage for whatever period of time you believe you would need to rebuild a station. The second piece that we've asked for is assume an extended single track, so half a platform at a time. So, again, it's not committing to anything that we're laying out here. It's asking them to give us their work approach and their schedule under those two scenarios.
Okay. I think for the future, what the committee would like to see is a little bit of a schedule that is not just the procurement piece and the project piece, but also the connections to the jurisdictions. And it doesn't have to be detailed. It's just basic check-in. Colleagues?
Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a series of questions, if you bear with me. My experience with earthquakes is that the contractors get a bonus for completing projects ahead of schedule. Is that in the RFQ?
So right now we're just doing qualifications. We haven't got into the details of that. All of our contracts always have liquidated damages if they finish late. What we're contemplating here and likely to do are put incentives in for try to get them to finish early.
Okay, so I think the committee, Mr. Chairman, would be interested in knowing what kind of bonus incentives we can build into this massive exercise to mitigate the time it's going to take to do these stations. Second question, Mr. Chairman, if you bear with me, is are we contemplating on issuing multiple contracts with multiple contractors, for example, having two contractors working simultaneously on the stations below the airport in that same summer period?
So the way we've teed it up right now is all the stations in the south of the airport are in one contract.
Can we consider two contracts that summer?
At this point, I don't believe we would have the time to be able to restart the procurement and have a contractor or contractors on board by Memorial Day of next year.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it would be interesting to know why we can't have multiple contractors working on certain lines like south of the airport.
Well, we expect the subsequent ones, 20 and 21, that we will certainly look at that.
Okay.
But for this one, we're not confident that there's that much of a capacity or interest in taking on this kind of contract to try to do two now.
No, I'm talking about two contractors.
Yeah, I understand that. So what we've learned so far with the RFQ on the street is we were about six general contractors that picked up the plans, or a bunch of subs and suppliers and things. What we asked, what our procurement department asked of those six of last week is, because the RFQ initial proposals are due next Friday, we asked them out of curiosity, who's submitting? Looks like we're only going to get three proposals.
Okay, so we can do three contracts then.
So we got three. So it's we could theoretically hire three general contractors, but what we hear from the general contractor community is not the general contractors; it's the sub capacity.
So it isn't
necessarily a general contractor issue. It's the ability of the subcontracting community to also support doing the work, amount of work.
Well, let's go back to these contractors and find out what the subcontract issue
sure.
is all about.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple more questions if you bear with me. Are we looking at changing the station configurations for egress and of our customers and to make more flow access to the trains?
Are you talking about adding additional vertical transportation?
Yeah, more escalators or more.
No, we're not undertaking any of that with part of this. This is basically rebuilding what's there and upgrading what we have where we can.
All right, can you come back to the committee and tell us if there's any opportunities to fix egress issues at our stations that are being considered
sure.
for rehabilitation? Last question, Mr. Chairman, is there any way to mitigate this concrete mess like 40 years from now by extending the canopies or doing any kind of mitigation that you don't see when you're standing on the platform?
Sure. As I alluded to earlier, we see the worst of the conditions in the areas that aren't underneath the canopy, because that's where the snow falls and that's where the de-icing agents go.
Yeah.
So, and that's where the rain falls and
yeah.
you know, so forth and so on. So the best mitigation for this would be to undertake a program to extend the canopies over the entire platform.
Are we going to consider that?
That's not part of this right now. That would be equally as challenging from an implementation standpoint, because you'd be building over the tracks again.
Well, it doesn't seem like it's a whole lot of extending the canopy that, you know, to get some gutter guards, you know, to, you know, catch the water.
Well, there's literally nothing there now, so we'd actually have to build all the infrastructure, columns, footings, and everything to be able to build the canopy out where the platforms aren't today.
So that's not...
It's currently not on the table for this, no.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. I'm a designated pinch hitter today for my colleague, Mr. Augustine, but I'll try to come up to his high level of colloquy with you today. I understand completely your proposal for rebuilding the platforms and rebuilding what's on the line. My concern is really the pushback that's come from the jurisdictions about what this means for the riders. And I'm just really struck by the real lack of a mitigation plan for the riders that's announced at the same time for the rebuilding plan. And I realize that to do that, we need to have some consultation with the jurisdictions. But I think that's been a problem in that we focus too much, or we focus properly on what is our assets, and we've left for someone else or later. I just want to contrast that with what's going on in New York, which you're probably all familiar with, the shutdown of the L line, which runs from Williamsburg into Manhattan for a year or so to rebuild the tunnel. And New York and the MTA have already announced a mitigation plan, which, you know, involves shutting down major east-west roads in Manhattan and limiting them just to buses for that period. Other streets like 13th Street or 16th Street will be just for bicycle riders and, I guess, scooter riders these days, which seems to be the craze. You know, and so I guess I'm looking for us to do the kind of same thing. And I guess I want to do two things. First, I want to suggest that you come up with a preliminary mitigation plan by the end of the year. This first phase is summer of 2019. So something that you can announce by the end of the year, I think, might be helpful. It might be a good thing for us to do. Second of all,
but can I stop before you issue that instruction?
I'm suggesting.
No, but I think I wasn't quite clear on what I asked these folks to do, which is actually supplement the execution plan that they have in place with milestones regarding jurisdictional piece. And one would be a conclusion about mitigation, so I agree with you fully.
Okay.
But I want to give these guys a chance to actually tell us instead of giving them the date.
The other thing I want to suggest is let's be creative about this. You know, maybe, you know, come Tom's suggestion of added cost incentives for them to finish earlier. Why don't we do some incentives for the riders? Maybe free parking at Huntington, Franconi, and Van Doren with express buses. They'll take them up directly up to Pentagon, where they can pick up the yellow, you know, and blue line or reduced fares. You know, maybe we should reach out to the ride-hailing services, Uber and Lyft, for some arrangements to, you know, pick up riders at home and take them to Roslyn or Pentagon City or someplace like that, so we get them off of, you know, get them off of I-95 and, you know, get them some way to get back on our system so they're not driving into the downtown, you know, core. So just some ideas that let's be creative about that and just not limit ourselves to saying to the jurisdictions, hey, what's your plan? You know, we've got an expensive project. You budgeted it at $300 to $400 million over, I guess, what, three or three and a half years. I think we can afford to, you know, sort of bulk that up a little bit with some other subsidies or incentives for the riders who are going to be inconvenienced during this period. That's my 2 cents for today. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Evans. Thank you. I think we just need to schedule, I don't know when the next date, but another committee meeting to get an update on where we are. Leave it up to you all to tell us when we should do that, but don't wait too long.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We need to really, thank you, Mr. Christensen. Let's move on to the third quarter update. Yeah, do it quickly. A couple of highlights, but that's really it. Thank you. Okay.
Okay. Eric Christensen, thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members. I'll try and do this quickly. Presentation attempts to address two questions. Number one, are we spending the money that the jurisdictions provide us? And number two, what is the benefit to the customers? So if you go to the next page, please.
Wrong one.
Okay. You want me just to briefly talk about it? Okay, we'll go and they'll catch up with us. So in fiscal 13, we spent roughly $846 million, which was about 80 cents on every dollar that we did over the next 2 years. That declined by about $130 million. We were down in the $700 million range and spending about $2 for every three that was authorized. GM comes on board the first year. We get $300 million bump. This year we're probably going to be another $200 million above that amount. We're somewhere around $1.2 billion. We currently estimate that we will spend 98% of our allocation. Then the next nine slides, essentially, rather than looking at this from a contract perspective, we look at it from a program perspective, try to identify those large investments that we're currently making on a programmatic level. They represent about 75% of our fiscal 18 allocation. So on this slide is rail cars investments, essentially two parts to this, acquisition of new 7,000 series cars plus our annual rehab program. Our accomplishments is we've put 160 new cars in service for the first 3 months, which is the planned level. We have a total of 520 cars in service for customers as of March 31st. We were able to dispose of the 1 and 4K series rail cars, and we removed 130 5K series cars as well. Benefit to the customer, rail cars are, the reliability has increased to 113,000 miles before delay, which is the second highest in 11 years. Customer offloads are down 37%. We have enough vehicles to provide 100% 8-car trains on the green and yellow line to meet peak ridership demand. Next page, please. Rail infrastructure, which is our annual state of good repair of power as well as capacity improvements. As you can see in the columns, we the accomplishments, several equipment installations, all boots on the main line have been completed, and all cables are off the ground in the underground. Impact to the customers, a 46% reduction in offloads due to power issues, and again, we were able to accommodate the 8-car trains on the green and yellow line. Next page, please. Next one is track and structure rehab plus water mitigation. Essentially, it's an annual program, plus this year we did do grouting in the tunnels adjacent to Medical Center. As you can see on the right-hand side, sort of the accomplishments we occurred. We exceeded some, a few other ones we didn't. We reallocated resources to allow us to hit the highest priorities, as well as we have less leak mitigation in the tunnels at Medical Center. Benefits to the customer is a 48% reduction in speed restrictions due to the improved track conditions. Next one is cell phone radio system. We're replacing our existing 700 megahertz system by 2020, as well as putting in, we are mandated to provide cell phone coverage throughout our tunnel system. Currently, we're about 13% complete on this project. We're actually on schedule, on critical path schedule. We're expecting to have factory acceptance of the radio system in May. We accelerated the purchase of multi-band radios for the police. We purchased 450 to allow interoperability with our local jurisdiction partners. We installed approximately 140,000 linear feet of snake trays, that's what holds the cables up against the tunnels, as well as 548,000 linear feet of cable. We are slightly ahead on both of those for the year. We did add cell phone coverage from Metro Center to Potomac Avenue, I believe in August, and Benning Road to Addison around Thanksgiving. We have two more scheduled by the end of the fiscal year, Addison Road to Largo, Town Center, and College Park to Gallery Place. Next page. Lighting improvements. This is a major initiative for the GM. We did award the 3-year contract to replace platform track bed lighting at all 48 underground stations. Mezzanine lighting will be completed by the end of June. The benefits to the customer, we've seen significant lighting improvements, the biggest being at Foggy Bottom and Farragut West, 700% increase in the readings before and after. Our new light fixtures are 67% more energy efficient, and the light bulbs we're using require to be replaced 50 to 80% less frequently. Escalator replacement, we have 618 escalators throughout the system. We replace them between 25 and 30 years. First 9 months, we replaced 23 escalators, and we have another five, so we'll have a total of 28. We're actually ahead of schedule. Judiciary escalators came online a full month earlier, which allowed us to move two Southern Avenue escalators by a month. And we are meeting our target of 93% availability for escalators throughout the system. Next one is elevator rehab. We have 278 elevators throughout the system. We finished nine elevators through the first 9 months. We have another five planned by the end of the year. We are slightly ahead of schedule on that as well. Availability of that is 97%. Next is bus investments. This includes two things, replacement of roughly 100 buses per year, as well as an annual rehab to another 100 buses to extend the useful life to 15 years. Generally speaking, we're on target. The only one is our current bus replacement is slightly behind schedule because of mandated environmental testing of the engine. Good news here is at the end of last month, we just awarded a new 5-year contract for buses in remarkably quick time, I might add. So that's all of our buses now are 100% low floor, and one-time performance is improving as well on the bus side. And then finally, Andrew's Bus Garage. This is replacing Southern Avenue with 175-bay bus capacity, plus we also have our new major overhaul maintenance facility for buses. It's going to add an additional 10 bays to allow them to do more work there. It's expected to be completed 2020. It's approximately 82% completed, and we're expecting that this will be operational in early, should be ready for service July of 2019.
Okay.
Any questions? All right. Thank you, sir.
Well, first of all, I want to apologize for not giving you a lot of time, but to be quite blunt with you, I think it's important to stay in the rhythm of doing performance metrics. So next time, we'll give you more time. For those of you who have access to the slide deck, you should look at it, because the thing that's terrific is there's no question that delivery of the capital program, trying to think of the analogy, far better than it has been. So it's really great to see. And secondly, for the committees, from a committee standpoint, you guys are doing a far better job of explaining to us where you're at, not just money spent, but from the standpoint of program delivery and impact on customers. So we really appreciate that. So I'm going to turn to my colleague to see if they have any.
I just had one quick question. Yep. So we just did the escalator at Judiciary.
Yes, sir.
Why doesn't it have a canopy?
Because we are, let me make sure, because we are negotiating with the National Park Service regarding the canopy associated with that. Our plan is we have additional concepts that I believe we're going to show them around Labor Day, and then hopefully based on that they will pick a canopy that they can approve, and then we will move forward on that. We actually, I believe, have eight stations that are currently in that scenario right now.
There's only eight that don't have canopies?
There's a total of 10. Eight, I believe, we're dealing with the National Park Service.
Okay, well, if we could get that, we'd have eight that would take the load off our escalators.
Correct, and then the other two we'll put in that same contract and move quickly.
Let's know about that.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions?
I have no questions, Mr. Chairman. I will be hearing with the Finance Committee a very similar presentation, or at least the guts of this presentation, in about a half an hour. And so I'll defer any questions until then. But I do want to suggest that in the future, perhaps we figure out a way so we don't have these duplicate presentations, right, either figuring out some way to do a different or maybe a joint meeting of the two committees.
Yeah, we've talked about that, but yeah, we keep talking. We should actually do it.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Augustine. With no further business to come before the committee, we stand adjourned.